Middle Georgia suffered a spate of drug overdoses this month. In less than a week's time, 19 people were hospitalized with similar symptoms. 30 cases have been reported. 5 people have died. Joining me to talk about this is Chris Hendry, Chief Medical Officer of Navescent Health. Hi, Chris.
Hi, good morning.
Also with me is Shannon Gordon, CEO of River Edge Behavioral Health Center in Macon. Hi, Shannon.
Hello.
And by Skype, we have writer and neuroscientist Mark Lewis. Hi, Mark.
Hi.
So, Chris, what was the cause of these overdoses? And by that, I mean we have been suffering through an opioid addiction epidemic for a number of years. But why this particularly severe number of cases?
Well, it appears that there was a new compounded tablet that was being sold on the street as Percocet. And in reality, it looks like from the GBI analysis of the chemicals, it was actually a compound that was similar to fentanyl and another compound that's on the street known as Pink. So neither of the drugs inside of the tablet that people were purchasing as Percocet were actually Percocet. And the drugs are extremely potent, which accounted for the number of overdoses we saw in such a short period of time.
Mark, what makes fentanyl so dangerous?
Well, as Chris said, it's very potent. It's a 2 milligram quantity is enough to kill somebody. And there's a whole lot of analogs of similar drugs, some of which are 10 or 100 times more powerful. And these drugs seem to be quite cheap to manufacture, so they're just popping out on the street all over the place, sometimes mixed with heroin, sometimes in pill form, and the buyers never know what they're getting.
Now, Shannon, we have had a lot of discussion nationwide about the overprescription of painkillers. But in many cases, and I think it looks like this case, these are things that people bought on the street. Is this something that you find is common?
Yes. At some point, people do move to the street to satisfy their desire for chemicals.
Give me an idea of that sort of common timeline of someone who becomes addicted and how they end up buying pills that may be dangerous on the street.
Well, every person is an individual, and so the timeline is not static. I've not known someone ever in my history of treatment to want to start and end up in addiction. People begin to manage pain, or they begin to see what it's like, and then the drug begins to take its hold.
So here's a comment from Bibb County Sheriff David Davis. He was speaking at a press conference just a few weeks back.
I would invite anyone who has a drug problem or who takes illegal drugs and is worried right now that they may face some legal repercussions, we're going to let that pass. We need to know who's putting this poison in the community right now.
Chris, how do you know when your use of painkillers is dangerous?
Well, like Shannon said, most of the time these people start off because they've got some type of pain they need to control, whether it's some post-operative pain or an injury or what have you. And it's insidious. It's not like one day you're taking your pain medication and the next you're addicted and are engaging in risky behaviors. But if you're starting to miss work, if you're buying, unable to get the drugs from your physician, you're looking at asking your friends, you're borrowing their drugs, or you're getting them on the street. And once you start engaging in those risky behaviors, you should be able to recognize that you're no longer in control of your life with regard to your pain control.
So we have, in 2015, opioids were involved in more than 33,000 deaths nationwide, and opioid overdoses have quadrupled since 1999. This is information from the Attorney General's offices of Georgia. 55 Georgia counties have overdose rates higher than the national average. Mark, do we have an idea of why we're seeing such a spike in these addictions and deaths at this point in our history?
Well, we have some ideas, but I think it's important to get on the table that very few people who take opioids for pain actually become heroin addicts, actually start using street drugs. The percentage given by NIDA, the National Institute on Drug Abuse, is 4%. So only 4% of people who actually take prescription opioids go on to use drugs for recreational purposes. And that's really important. You know, it's like most people who dive start off swimming, but it isn't the case that everyone who swims ends up diving, right? So that's an important element. So I don't think the cause is actually in the drug. I don't think the drug takes hold of a person. I think that's kind of a magical sort of metaphor. Rather, I think it's the person's life, a sense of meaninglessness or emptiness, a sense of dislocation, loneliness, not knowing who you are or how to fit in with your community, with your friends, with your culture. I think those are really, really important factors.
Then let me take that to both Shannon and Chris as well, in terms of what's causing this spike in overdoses and why is what Mark's talking about? Why are those kind of distinctions important, Chris?
The spike in overdoses, in what I've read and doing some research on this, is the introduction of fentanyl and designer drug analogs similar to fentanyl into the marketplace. The drugs that typically we use to control pain medication are Percocet, Lortabs, these type things, and they have OxyContin and hydrocodone in them, which don't have near the potency. The introduction of black market fentanyl derivatives, to me, seems to have heralded the increased number of overdoses in the last 2 years. These are not drugs that were originally prescribed to patients for pain control. You know, fentanyl has been around since the 60s as an adjunct to anesthesia. We do use it in like spinal epidurals and certain pain control, but it's all under the supervision of a physician, typically in a hospital setting. Later it became, they put it on patches for pain control in patients with terminal disease such as cancer to control their pain. These drugs being introduced into the street have resulted in the increased number of overdoses that you see.
If you're just joining me, I'm speaking with River Edge Behavioral Health Center CEO Shannon Gordon, also Navicent Health Chief Medical Officer Chris Hendry, who you just heard, and neuroscientist Mark Lewis. This discussion we're having at this moment is a little bit problematic because it appears that law enforcement, at least, is focused on prescriptions. So we got this message from Attorney General Chris Carr of Georgia, who says, from June 2016 to May of 2017, the total number of legal opioid doses prescribed to Georgia patients surpassed 541 million, and we are losing far too many citizens as a result of drug overdoses. And then he pledges to work on behalf of the people of Georgia to stop this. But Shannon, where should attention be focused, on prescriptions or on street medication?
On prescription. In 2009, opioid prescriptions were the most abused drug by young adults, according to the National Institute of Drug Abuse. And so that's where I would put my focus.
Then let's take this to the broader subject here, which is how we treat opioid addiction or addiction in the medical community and as a society, because there is sometimes an argument, especially among policymakers, about whether to treat addiction, like drug addiction like this, as a moral failing, a weakness in your character, or as a disease. We went out and asked people here in Atlanta what they thought, and here's the first person.
My name is Howard Connolly. I live here in Atlanta, Grant Park area. I think it starts off as a moral and turns into a medical, because sometimes a person's environment, stress levels, things of that nature might turn them towards what they might deem as a way to relax and get away from it, and that creates the addiction. And then you have to treat an addiction through medical resources.
Mark, what do you make of this question?
Well, I don't see addiction as a disease, but I do see it as a very powerful habit that becomes deeply ingrained. I think we have to look at what's in the drug, what the drug is doing for the person. And opioids are being received by brain systems that are in charge of reducing stress, as Shannon said, but also reducing pain, reducing a sense of panic. So why are people going around feeling so stressed and so panicked and so alone that they might want to take large doses of opioids? And by the way, it's not correct to go after the prescription opioids per se, because it's, as Chris said, it's fentanyl. It's street fentanyl. It's killing people. And that's, you know, that's a whole different matter. But, you know, we have to ask deeper questions rather than just who should we go after or whether it's a disease or not.
Well, but this, whether to treat it as a disease is a question that's going on in terms of where to put money. So let me put this to you, Shannon. Here's another comment from someone that we spoke to.
I'm Jasmine Brookings from Atlanta, Georgia. I'm going to say a moral problem. Simply because, you know, growing up in a black community, we go through more problems than the Caucasians go through. So, you know, we're more affected by the drug use.
Shannon, how much does this particular question affect our treatment of someone with an addiction?
I see the issue of it's being perceived as a moral issue as a tremendous barrier to seeking treatment because of the shame that's associated with addiction, so many do continue to see it as a moral failing. But people move into addiction when they use compulsively, when they experience cravings, when they continue to use despite negative consequences, and when they've developed physical tolerance that results in withdrawal when the chemical is stopped, and that is medical.
All right, so let's hear one more comment from someone here in Atlanta.
My name is David Traeger. I live up in Duluth, Georgia. I think it's a little bit of both. As far as medically, I think that there's something in your brain that just doesn't allow you to stop that addiction, you know, and then as far as like morally, you kind of know it's wrong. Like I smoke, and I know it's wrong, but it's just very difficult for me to stop.
So, Chris, is it fair to make the comparison between an addiction to painkillers to something like smoking or a more common addiction?
Yes, absolutely. The physical changes the body undergoes after their exposure to opioid drugs are, in some cases, the first dose can rewire how your nervous system works, which is why patients who detox off of heroin or other opioid-type medications that act on the opioid pain receptors, often this has to be done in a supervised situation. The patients can have confusion, seizures, nausea, vomiting, dehydration, hallucinations. These are signs of a physical removal of the chemical that they become dependent on, the same as nicotine.
So, Mark, where in this process, as somebody moves from being treated with painkillers, maybe post-surgical or something like that, and possibly down the road toward addiction, where's the best point for intervention?
Yeah, we're conflating two things here. One is physical dependency, chemical dependency, which is what Chris described. And the other is the psychological elements of addiction, which are much more serious. When people really get addicted to something, they often stop and stay off for a while and then come back to it a few months later, a few years later, and it's the continuing relapsing, which is a psychological issue, because by then the drug is nowhere. It's been out of your body for a very long time. These psychological changes have to do with habits of thinking, I need to take this to feel better. And that's the habit that needs to be changed. And I don't think we have the tools to change it from a medical perspective. Medicine is great for dealing with withdrawal symptoms and overdoses and stuff like that for the drugs that do become create physical dependencies like opioids. But cocaine, for example, there's no physical dependency. Gambling is known to be an addiction, is defined as an addiction, but obviously there's no chemical dependency. So I don't think medicine is actually well equipped to deal with the psychological changes that need to happen for people to get better.
So Shannon, this is quite literally your business. What do you make of that?
I would concur with Mark that it is a biopsychosocial and physical phenomena that needs holistic approach.
You know, it's interesting that you brought up gambling. When you look at behavioral conditioning, random positive reinforcement is the strongest behavioral modification that you can do. And that's what you see with gambling and slot machines, because it's this random payout. And the reinforcement in your behavior is dramatic.
Well, then how does that look in terms of treatment? How do you then treat that?
Well, most when you talk to heroin addicts, they'll tell you after that first high, they're constantly chasing that first high. And it's never as good as their first dose. I'm sure Shannon can speak better to that than I can in working with.
Okay, Shannon.
Again, it is a biopsychosocial phenomena, and the most effective treatments address thinking, feeling, behavior, and the physical components.
as long as we can save their life, right? I mean, we started off right. this whole thing talking about overdoses, which are deadly. Mark, how serious should we be taking this? In other words, is the medical community and the political community that makes policy and determines where money goes, are they taking it as seriously as warranted?
Well, they're taking it seriously, but they're making a lot of really bad decisions. I mean, the policy of going after this person or that person, the doctors or the dealers, it's just not going to work. You go after one dealer, another one's going to pop up, or 10 more are going to pop up. The idea of restricting the availability of opioid drugs for people who are addicted is just dead wrong, because if you restrict their availability, they will definitely go to the street to get their to get what they need, and they have a much greater likelihood of overdosing. So we need to supply drugs like naloxone, which act directly against the effect of the opioid on breathing and on everything else. So that should be available just about everywhere. That's the only way to stop an OD as it's happening. And we should be making methadone and suboxone available. Those are opioids that are given to people with known addictions who need to take opioids for one reason or another. And restricting those drugs is just going to push them closer to the grave.
That is writer and neuroscientist Mark Lewis. We also spoke with Shannon Gordon, CEO of River Edge Behavioral Health Center, and Chris Hendry is Chief Medical Officer at Navicent Health. Thank you so much to all of you.
Thank you.
Welcome.
Thank you.